So when I say that in every moment, life offers us the gift of the present moment's experience, we know that a lot of what life offers us, most of what life offers us, we don't get to pick and choose. It appears in the form of environmental conditions, people coming into our life, states of mind arising due to causes and conditions we're not often not aware of, physical experiences, the body doing its own thing, and they appear. And so we have the opportunity to just receive it. That's not to deny that there are times when we have a lot of intentionality and we go pursue a certain kind of experience, and if supported by other conditions, then our intention is realized and we have that kind of experience. But a lot of life, and what we get to experience a lot in formal meditation practice, is stuff just happens. Just happens. And, you know, I think for all of us, there's a 50-50 chance that it's going to be pleasant or unpleasant. We don't get to pick. It just happens. So the challenge for us is when life offers us, moment by moment, these experiences, what we're talking about this weekend and what I want to speak about now is how do we practice loving in that moment? Friday night, I was talking about love as really mostly the relationship between people, beings, and pointed to the fact that, you know, every moment we can have a loving relationship to the moment. Now I want to talk about really not how that happens, but what we can do to facilitate that happening. When we read of Rumi and we hear him talking about his experiments with love like this, "Look, I tried everything, but nothing was lovelier than you. And when I dived into the ocean, there was no pearl like you. I opened 1,000 vats and barrels and I tasted all of them, but never was intoxicated by any wine but you." How strange. He's not talking about someone. He's talking about love itself, or the beloved, whatever the beloved divine, the divine beloved is for him, and for us, however you imagine, just the experience of love. And in Rumi's experience and in our own experience when we practice loving kindness or metta, it can be used to access the most exquisite experience of being in the presence of the divine, even to use that language to talk about metta experiences, where you just know, you just feel that this is the divine. This is what the divine is, or this is how it's experienced. And more than that, the kind of, as Rumi often talks about, just the ecstatic union with the beloved, the ecstatic union with love itself. So too in metta, we may have the object of the benefactor or the friend or neutral person or ourself or difficult person, and the object changes, the person changes throughout practice. But what gets cultivated is the power of love and the accompanying mental states that support this experience of love. In both cases, the direction of practice is to merge isn't the right word, but to become one with the experience. To so take it in that you disappear in this union, mystical often, feeling, mystical, mysterious, magical, where you disappear and this other experience takes place. You know, ecstasy, bliss, joy, radiant benevolence, whatever you want to call it, some form of love. And when you're in that kind of love, you don't step back and kind of objectively observe it. It's like, you might. Our Western scientific conditioning is pretty strong. But if you do, you kind of miss the mystery of it, you know, the magic of it. You know, you kind of like objectify love. Hello, come on. It's not to be objectified. It's like, get in there, enjoy the soup. But that's what the practice of loving kindness takes you to, is kind of mainlining love, where you're just taken over by it. And in that merging, or in that absorption, in our language, in the Buddhist language, in that absorption in love, then there is this feeling of oneness, this feeling of being identified with all beings universally, for example, or losing the sense of your own individual self-identity. And for many people, that's a goal. That's a desired goal. Get out of your own head trip and let it go. And that's a way to do it. You can leave that individuated sense of yourself behind by merging with either the beloved, love itself, or the object of your concentration practice, if you will. One way to talk about the kind of the different functions of mind that makes that possible is to look at what love isn't and what makes love possible. Love is not aversion. Love is not distancing. Love is not separateness. Love is not alienation, isolation, being cut off from, or in any way pushing back, striking out at, or not taking in the present moment's experience. So what that means, if you're not doing that to the present moment, then you're doing this. Come to me. I'll accept whatever you have to, life. I'll accept whatever you have to offer. And in that is the basic posture of love, being receptive. But not just being receptive, but being willing to be touched by the experience. It's not so much that we have to go out there and get it, but we have to get out of the way so it can get us. And so in that case, we have to prepare the mind to be touched by present moment. And in the Buddhist vernacular, it's being connected to, being touched by, being contacting the present moment. It's our mind being contacted by whatever is arising due to causes and conditions outside of our control. But it's clear that something's arising, and the work that we can do is prepare the mind to receive it, being willing to be touched, not knowing in every moment whether it's going to be pleasant or unpleasant, familiar or novel, subtle or gross. We don't know. We don't know what's coming. And so it takes a really resilient, trusting, confident, energized mind, heart, to even attempt to love life. Right? Because if we have a guarded, a defensive, a kind of like, I'll only let in what what I want to let in posture, a lot doesn't get in. You know, you miss a lot. And so we may create an artificial sense of safety and security and stability in our life because we've kept out everything that might rock our boat. That's not love, though. Okay. Same in our relationships, if you just want to extrapolate. I'm not going to be talking about it from that term, but if your relationship is so safe that nothing can get in, good luck. I don't think that's love. But we can construct our relationships to be pretty tight, pretty rule-bound, pretty behavior-bound, pretty safe. Nothing unexpected ever happens. Not in my life. Everything unexpected happens. A lot. Okay. So in that basic posture of being willing to be touched by life, we're allowing ourselves to be connected to everything. We really are acting on the understanding of everything is connected to everything. Everything is touched by everything. This moment has come into being because of everything that has ever happened and is happening at this moment. If something back there 20 years ago didn't happen, this moment wouldn't be like this. But because this moment is like it is, everything that's happened in the past has contributed to it. Everything. So in that, we can really see that our sense of ourself that appears in this moment, it's not our construction. We don't get to create that. It appears due to causes and conditions outside of our control. We can recognize it, and we can get identified with it, and we can like it, or we can dislike it, but we don't get to make it. It happens. There is created this sense of self that is experiencing this present moment. Does anybody not have that experience? We all do. And even if we don't like the sense of self that gets constellated, nevertheless, we can recognize it. Or even if we do like it, it still happens. And even if we've heard the Buddhist teachings about the not-self, we still see it. But in that willingness to be or to recognize the connectedness of all beings and all conditions from the present and the past, how can't you be safe? How can't you be safe? It's like everything is supporting the present moment just like it is. Everything. What's to fear? What's to fear? And yet we do. We imagine something catastrophic happening. And catastrophic things do happen. But do we have to walk around in fear that it might? Or if we have this open, trusting understanding of interconnectedness, when the catastrophic thing happens, we'll be there. We'll be ready for it. We'll be responsive. We'll recognize it. We don't have to try to prevent it from happening. We can't control those conditions. But we can be ready for it by preparing the mind to be loving, to be accepting, to be open, to recognize what's going on. The second quality of mind, being open and receptive, allowing ourselves to be touched by the present moment, is steadying our attention enough that we can get it, that we can really taste the present moment. You know, if you just take a piece of food and you just put it on your tongue for, you know, a moment and put it there and then you take it out, you might have felt the touch sensation, but you really didn't get the taste, right? To get the taste of that morsel of food, you really have to spend some time with it. You got to roll it around, the tongue's got to play with it, and you got to caress it a lot. You got to mash it against the top of your mouth and chomp it with your teeth and get it kind of spread around throughout the whole interior of the mouth before you can taste it. We have to do that with every experience in your mind. We have to be willing to take in the experience and taste it, meaning spend some time with it. Just really massage it with your mind, or let your mind, here it is. So you hold one hand like this. This is an experiment. Please follow. Hold one hand like this. Now take the other finger on the other hand and just touch it lightly. Lift it off. What did you feel? You felt something. You felt a touch sensation. And that's about it. Right? Now you take that same finger and you put it on the same spot and you just rub it around. Just kind of move it around. Just kind of, okay. Move it around a little bit. Now what'd you feel? Oh, you can feel the texture of the back of the skin. You can feel its temperature. You can feel where the things are under the skin. There's a lot of texture there, isn't there? You know a lot more about that touch sensation, right? Because you spend time with it. Well, in our openness to the experiences of life, we have to steady our attention on the present moment. We have to let ourselves touch, but also taste the experience. So often we're in a hurry. You know, sometimes, I'm not going to go there. I'm not going to connect that to different ways of making love, but nevertheless, we've tried that. Okay, take your time. With everything, you know, taste your food. Aren't we done yet? And if you do, allow yourself to be touched and taste the beloved in this moment. How can't you be joyful? How can't you just get ecstatic? How can't you just delight in the experience? It's not because everything is pleasant, but when the mind is tasting fully anything in life, the mind is delighted. The mind just loves to do its work, which is to know without impediment. Did you ever get a deep tissue massage? Of course. We all had some kind of massage. Okay? You know, and they take their thumbs or they take these little sticks and they just grind them into the most painful, tight, tense spot in you, and it's excruciatingly pleasant. Right? How'd that happen? Well, same thing happens with the mind that is able to just relax and open to whether it's painful or pleasant experience, and you feel it, it is in the sensitivity to and the integrity of the tasting that the mind takes delight. It doesn't matter what it is. It can be pleasant, it can be unpleasant, it can be familiar, novel, gross, subtle. It doesn't matter. If you encourage and allow the mind to taste it, the mind will be ecstatically happy. Ecstatically happy. I mean, pass out ecstasy happy. If you haven't noticed that, well, we all notice it when we're making love, right? At some point in that process, there's that point of like, okay, you're close. You can have that same experience with anything, every moment in life. Do you dare? Kind of exhausting. But it isn't. It's enlivening. But that kind of effervescent, bubbly, ecstatic, over the top, out the head, you know, just whatever, enlivening of the mind, the body when you're making love, but the mind when you're cultivating love, is divine. It is just divine. You know, we can't command it. We can allow it. We can understand the road, how to access it. But it's not ours. It comes because this is what the mind does. This is what the mind does, if you let it. With that, that's kind of like that's kind of like the orgasmic phase of making love. Okay. And what comes next? There. Phew. Been there, done that. You know, kind of the post-orgasmic kind of cool down cruise period. This we call it sukha in the meditative states. Sukha. You know, happy comfort of mind and body. Where the mind and the body is just like, well, somebody mentioned it either in a group or in somewhere, that everything is okay. It's like you can't find anything wrong with that. It's just okay. It's not delighted and blissful. Delighted and it's not like ecstatic anymore. It's blissful, or it's just kind of a smooth cruise to feeling strong, healthy, grounded, okay, confident, energized, but not stressed. All of those good feelings, all of the feelings that contribute to a supreme sense of well-being. You can do that with your mind. And finally, the another activity of mind, or another capacity of mind that is activated in cultivating love of the present moment, is the kind of stability that comes when you're not leaning into the future, you're not hanging on to the past, but you're just stably in the present moment with just this, whatever it is. You're not comparing it to what happened before. You're not aspiring to make it be like you've read in the book or anything. You're just, whatever this is, you just drop into it or drop onto it. No, it's not that the past and the present, and that the past and the future don't exist, but they're not the lens through which you see the present. This takes a lot of confidence, a lot of trust. Just in the recent group, we were talking about how you access the transcendent. You don't access the transcendent by having an idea of what it is, but you can prepare the mind to recognize transcendence when it occurs, and when it does, you get it. But you don't take the map with you. You don't take the textbook of how to experience transcendence with you to the point of transcendence, right? But if you train the mind, if you train the heart, if you put yourself in that position, if you're willing to, if you know about the idea of transcendence, then it can appear. You can recognize it when it appears. But it takes a lot of confidence, it takes a lot of clarity, it takes a lot of stability of mind to trust that you'll recognize it, and trust that you'll experience it, and trust that you'll recognize it when it happens. These are all the conditions for arousing, for learning to live in love with life. There's nothing particularly Buddhist about it. There's nothing Christian or Hindu about it. It's just human capacity to touch and be touched, be open, be willing to feel, and the mind will do the work. You really don't have to do it. You just have to be willing to experiment with love in each moment. And, you know, although we fail miserably much of the time, it doesn't take many times of succeeding to reaffirm the value of love in our life.